You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning, I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. I just told Paul a story about a quite famous celebrity who I can't name on the radio, who a load of money fell out of somebody's pocket while we were in a room. And he went, Jew roll.
God dear.
And then looked at me and went, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. It's just something we used to say when we grew up.
And you didn't chin him?
No, I didn't chin him because I know he didn't. It was just something that came out. But anyway, and the reason we were talking about that is because I dropped 20p and I was on my knees looking for it. And to be honest, I can't concentrate now. That money is gone and it's just playing on my mind. Anyway, Jamie, you come in. What you got?
Yeah, I want to talk about a front page of The Sun this morning, which is a policeman on a trampoline during a drugs raid.
Our taxis go on trampolining, bouncing policemen. And it's just a joke, isn't it?
Exactly. It's one thing skateboarding and dancing with the Extinction protesters, but trampolining during a drugs raid is always wrong. And that is... He was quite good. I think he was showing his mate he could do a backflip or something. Besides the point.
I heard what happened was the drug dealer was leaning out of an upstairs window, right? And the policeman, he thought, right, I know how to catch him. And he jumped on a trampoline and he did a double backflip and he grabbed him and then pulled him down. That was the only way they were going to catch him. Him on a trampoline.
Well, give him a medal then. Give him a promotion and a medal.
I absolutely think that was the right idea. He was messing about, but it wasn't...
People mess about at work the whole time.
They do.
But if you're a policeman, you shouldn't be doing that.
I'm on a trampoline now.
That's why the sound's going like that.
I almost did it and I thought, I can't be bothered.
But anyway, yeah, that's the front page of The Sun. There's a bit of outrage about it.
Yeah, you know what? There's one person outrage. Took a photo. There's one person took a photo.
Oh my God, what if they all start trampolining more? Is our money going
then
on
if
this?
If they were all trampolining, then anyone who didn't trampoline would be stupid not to be trampolining. We would have a trampolining police force, right? And that's just the way it goes.
Yeah,
oh my God.
I mean, that's what if they all started trampolining? Yeah, they're not all going to start trampolining.
Going, oh, a bit of trampolining. Why is there outrage? You know,
he's having a laugh. That's all.
Well, great. Let's get them all doing that. Let's buy them space hoppers.
Why do you keep saying that? One guy's trampolining, and your argument is. Well, what if they all trampoline?
Yeah, but you can't just say, it's just one bloke doing it. Oh, it's not a problem.
Hold on. It is. It's one bloke doing it.
How many trampolining policemen have you seen?
This
is how it starts, right? And then and then there's pogo sticks, space hoppers, and it just gets out.
Skateboarding, yeah. BMX riding.
Well, yeah, we saw that last week, didn't we?
Go down the South Bank. You see it all there, mate.
Anyway, shouldn't be doing that.
Maybe. But anyway, did they catch the drug dealer?
No, they didn't.
They didn't catch him?
No?
Well, not by doing that. I'm not sure,
because he jumped up and the drug dealer ran underneath him and ran away as he was in the air.
No!
Yeah, that could have happened.
That's what happened. Then where would we be? Exactly. Honestly, we pay our taxes so they can do this. Oh. All right.
Secret checks have been carried out to see how much taxes on cigarettes and alcohol could be increased.
What does that mean?
Well, they're doing experts are analysing data to see if people cut back when prices soar. But that doesn't seem to be the case, does it? I mean, pubs are still completely full, despite the fact that beer is ridiculously overpriced these days.
Beer is quite expensive, actually. But then cigarettes are... I mean, do you remember when cigarettes were a couple of quid a packet?
Yes, mate,
right?
I do.
Cigarettes, I believe now, and I'm not a smoker, but cigarettes, I believe, are something like £15 for a packet of cigarettes. And yet people are smoking. Maybe a bit less, but they are smoking.
Well, what they smoke now is roll-ups.
They do smoke right, but
they last a lot longer. They can, you know, they get a pack of that, and because I know, I think one of my daughters does that. She used to smoke cigarettes, but now smokes rollers.
Rollers, yeah,
and it just lasts a lot longer.
Well, I mean, one wonders what the cut-off point is. You imagine if cigarettes were £50 for a packet, then maybe people would go, do you know what? Maybe I'll leave it. But you're addicted.
They always, you know, always skint, but has always got a couple of fags. Everyone knows someone like that.
Yeah, but we used to have that thing where you'd like kind of nick a fag and it'd be like 10p's worth. Now it's like £1.50. You basically just go, can you give me £1.50?
Yeah. You know. The government have brought in Deloitte, the consultants, to look at living costs and work out whether people would still buy booze and alcohol if they were more expensive than they are now.
They'll
give that information to HMRC and then the government will decide whether they can hike them up a bit.
Well, what you have to consider is over the years, they have done that. They've just been going up and up and up, and people have still been finding the money and still been finding. Nothing tells me they won't still try and find that money to get their fags and booze.
Every year in the budget, every year, cigarettes and alcohol. You know, which is one of my favourite Oasis songs.
I do love that. Yeah.
That was the first time I heard Oasis.
Yeah?
Was cigarettes and alcohol. My mate, I was in his comedy store in 1996, just before Oasis came out. And my mate was from Manchester, knew about this band before anyone else. And he went, here, mate, listen to this, right? About 10 to 8. And the comedy store is packed. There's 400 people there. And he plays cigarettes and alcohol. And there's about 300 people, like meerkats. You could see their heads going up, going, what's this? What's this tune? And I thought they're going to be massive. Anything else?
Yeah, penis protests have been successful in Middlesbrough. Not as rude as you might think. It's to get potholes filled in. So someone or a group of people have been going round, having asked the council to fill in these potholes, and nothing was getting done.
Drawing penises,
graffiti, and within days, all filled in.
I like the sound of that.
That's great, isn't it?
Beautiful.
It shouldn't have to come to that, though.
We should draw penises everywhere. You're right. It shouldn't have to come to that. But you know what? Whatever works.
I know a couple of roads where I live could do with some penises being drawn there, mate. I'm telling you, there's potholes like you wouldn't believe.
Get your chalk out.
I'm going to have to do it, mate.
It's not a euphemism.
Your mind, man. What's wrong with you? I knew that was
the way it works. Okay.
You're going
to
be popping.
I'd like to draw circumcised penises in Golders Green and Stamford Hill. I think that would be funny. Don't you think? It would only be right. It would be respectful to the Jewish community. All right.
Trust you, man.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Are there any potholes in Golders Green that need doing?
Very lightly. You know, so I think that's a good idea, isn't it?
Get on it, yeah.
Okay, lovely. Love sports. Jamie here, going through the back pages. Jamie, what have you got?
Yeah, one of the main stories in the back pages today is about Leeds and Aston Villa. The Times headline, Bielsa orders side to concede. The Sun say Bielsa gives Villa goal. Henry Winter in the Times is saying, he's praising Marcelo Bielsa for his sportsmanship in allowing Aston Villa to go and score a goal. We'll move on to that, but I first want to talk about what happened and whether the right thing did happen. So, Tyler Roberts, Jonathan Codger, we'll start with that. Jonathan Codger, Aston Villa forward, goes down injured. Some of the Aston Villa players start putting their hands up in the air, trying to get Leeds to put the ball out. It's with Tyler Roberts, the left back. And I think this is the important thing. He looks like he's going to put the ball out and then doesn't. He just plays a half-hearted ball up the line to Mateusz Klich, who then sort of goes past, cuts inside, goes past a couple of Villa defenders who have just suddenly started playing again, having thought the ball was going to be put out, and curls it in the corner. Now, I feel really sorry for Leeds. I'm not a big Leeds fan. I'm not a Leeds fan, and I don't want them to go up. But I feel a bit sorry for Leeds here because I think players put too much pressure on the other team to kick the ball out when one of their players goes down. So when Jonathan Codger goes down injured, it's not a head injury, so the referee doesn't stop the game. And then Aston Villa players are all throwing their hands up in the air as if that Leeds have to put the ball out. And then so Tyler Roberts, poor left-back, then sort of half stops and thinks, do I need to do that? And then thinks, well, hang on a minute, no, I don't need to do that just because the Villa players want me to because they don't want to play with 10 men. And then pass it down the line. And then Klich goes on and scores. So, yes, it's an awkward situation and perhaps he shouldn't have half stopped and should have just carried on playing at full throttle. And then I think you could say, well, the Leeds players have done absolutely nothing wrong here.
And I think that is the point. If he wouldn't have half stopped, then it would have been fine. And I think that would have been a perfectly acceptable goal. And it's the Villa players' fault for claiming that they should stop just because Codger's lying there injured. But because he did half stop, because he did, and therefore the Villa players sort of expected him to put it out, when he didn't, they couldn't reset and get back. You know, it's hard to get going again. And that's the difference. So on the wider point of whether players should complain about when one of their teammates is down and expect the other team to stop, I think referees have to make sure that they understand it's not about what you want. It's about what I decide.
It's almost gamesmanship. It's almost that. And what the Villa players have done is they've suckered the Leeds fullback into hesitating.
Yeah.
Because they've put him under so much pressure. Now, really and truly, we all know, because it was, like I said, at the start of the season, refs come in and they underline everything. And what they will have said is, listen, I will decide, either ref will decide, if the game is to be stopped. You carry on. Until I blow the whistle, you play to the whistle. Do not even worry about the opponents having a pop at you. And that is what the ref will have made clear. You cannot intimidate or influence a player to kick the ball off the pitch. Don't care what's gone on. If I don't see it as a head injury, the game goes on until I stop it. And that's what happened. The fans, the crowd noise changed, but also the Villa players were so insistent that it be knocked off the pitch that the guy on the ball now starts to doubt. He starts to, like, and the minute he hesitated, everyone down tools.
Then the Villa players use that as an excuse and stop, and they all stop. And then they know that they can go back at the argument. Oh well, we all stopped.
Exactly.
I can't believe you did that. Which is what happened. Then they go on and score, and then they start pushing and shoving. Clear. Can't believe you did that. It's their own fault for stopping.
It's not ideal, but let's be fair. It's not just Villa players who do it.
Everyone does it. I'd have done it.
They all do it. The hypocrisy in all this is ridiculous, because it could have happened the other way around just as easily.
They've done the exact same thing. It's just part and parcel of the game. If that happened to me, if I'm Villa, I would be pressurising you to put the ball off the pitch, even though I know full well I have no right to do it.
Fine, you can do that. And if I go on and score, then you can't moan.
Can't complain. As long as you don't dilly-dally and make us think you're going to put the ball off the pitch, which causes us all
to
stop.
But they were even half-stopping even before he dilly-dallied a tiny bit. I don't think that's enough for them to go back and say, oh, you look just like you're going to... The first sign of him stopping a tiny bit and then they all completely stopped.
I think the point you're making is that the rules as they are... the rules are fine, but it's just the way that they are administered by the referees and how the players understand it. In the end, if the guy's got a head injury, you stop. If he hasn't got a head injury, you play on.
Yeah.
And the players have to be made to understand that.
Yeah.
They do. No, the thing about it is...
But they don't completely.
No, the thing about it is, Stoney, of course they understand it, but I want to stop you. Because I've got a player down. So I don't care what the rules are. I'm still... And that's what the Villa players said. Yeah, I'm still going to influence you.
Yes, but okay. You know what? Let's say that this happens again next week. Right? Let's say it happens in a Villa-Leeds game in the playoff.
God.
And the same thing occurs. And Bielsa would be well in his rights to basically say to his players, no, you carry on.
But that's the thing.
Not giving you a goal.
You see, for me, as far as I'm concerned... The Villa should play to the whistle. They know it.
I agree.
I
agree. But you know what? This is probably the best way to sort this out.
Yes, I agree.
Because, you know, just give them a goal back and then we can get on with the game.
Reset it.
Because remember also, there are 40,000 people in the stadium. There are Villa fans and Leeds fans. There was already a bit of trouble there anyway.
Yeah.
That happened to your lot, didn't it, Arsenal? Many moons ago, didn't it? Something similar to this.
Kanu took the, but it wasn't even Kanu took the free kick, right? And it was weird because Kanu had just arrived in the country, and there was a certain racism.
It was 45 then, wasn't he?
Racism is the wrong word, but if there was a bit of, well, he's African, he doesn't understand our culture or something, our English culture. But it wasn't him. It was Overmars who actually raced on to score the goal.
Yes,
I mean Kanu crossed it, and then Overmars scored. And then Arsene Wenger said, we'll replay the game, right? We'll replay the game. And everyone went, all right, then that's fair enough. Nobody complained about it.
Well, the king of sportsmanship, Marcelo Bielsa, did the same. He said, oh, God, well, not replay the game.
But you did that.
But you can have the goal. I wonder whether he'd have done the same. Well, one, if Leeds needed to win that game and then they still had a chance of automatic promotion. Because, yes, although mathematically they were still in it, even if they'd have won that game, they're still not going up because they had a worse goal difference. I don't think he would then have let them score that goal. And secondly, if the whole Spygate thing hadn't happened and basically tarnished his reputation as being unsportsmanlike, whether he thought, well, now if I don't let Villa score again, then I've got the Spygate thing and I've been the manager who's done this... then my reputation's ruined. So he angrily, he didn't like the situation at all, angrily said, all right, then, well, you can have a goal.
Well, he insisted to the players.
Well,
he did insist.
Yeah, but I think he was so angry because I think he'd asked the Villa, he'd been arguing with John Terry the whole game. I think he'd asked John Terry and Dean Smith, what do you want me to do? And they said, we want you to score. So then he's just fuming that he has to let them give him a goal, but that's his decision. So he's, you can see him fuming, shouting, let him score, let him score. But he's angry about that, about having to do it.
Of course.
Let's be thankful there wasn't more riding on it.
Yeah.
Because then that would have made things really tense.
So now in the playoffs, you've got potentially Leeds playing, looks like probably Derby, which is the whole thing with Lampard and Bielsa, and then Bielsa doing that two-hour press conference where he basically gave the whole world all of Derby's tactics and how what they do at corners and all that nonsense because Lampard had accused him of spying, potentially playing them, and then they could even meet Villa in the final, so it's going to be feisty.
It's great. A Leeds-Villa final would be fantastic, would it not? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
This is Love Sport.
There's a story in the Times about Team Ineos, or the old Team Sky. Now
cycling.
Now Team Ineos. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who owns Ineos, the petrochemical company, has bought Team Sky. And the Tour de Yorkshire starts on Thursday. And Matt Dickerson in the Times is talking about whether it's passion for cycling or perhaps a PR job to try and raise the profile of Ineos, the company.
What? Sorry, so you're saying he's actually questioning whether Ineos actually have always loved cycling or whether they just, you know what, they're trying to maybe have Ineos associated with something which is not about chemicals and petrochemicals, whatever, which is not really a particularly trendy industry.
Exactly, yeah. Well, they were accused by Friends of the Earth of buying Team Sky basically as an attempt at greenwashing the brand. And actually there's a bit of fracking going on by them in Yorkshire. So some, anti-fracking protesters have built a poster basically with Sir Jim Ratcliffe with devil horns. And masks they've printed out, which they're going to be wearing at the Tour de Yorkshire.
You know what? It's a petrochemical company. I mean, It's not going to be a particularly green industry, is it? But that level of debate, I'm not sure that's helpful. I mean, I'm really not sure. I mean, we do need petrochemical companies, don't we? For stuff, I don't quite know what they do, if I'm totally honest with you. But I'll tell you what, we need them because the guy's worth about 100 billion quid. Mm. So somebody's buying whatever they're producing.
Yeah,
that stuff is important. Mm. And I don't think it helps to have whether they buy a cycling company to greenwash. I think it's a vaguely valid criticism, but hey, someone's got to pay the money for him.
Yeah.
He's got it.
I think to be fair to him as well, he loves his sport. He's got a Chelsea season ticket. He bought Ben Ainsley's sailing team, and that was just when they went out for a gin and tonic, apparently, to have a chat. And he ended up pouring £110 million into that team to attempt to win back the America's Cup in 2021. He's also bought a Swiss football team. And he's building a football academy in Botswana with the attempt to bring players over who look brilliant. So he loves his sport and he says he wants to try and make as many days in his life as memorable as possible. So I think it's perhaps a bit unfair to say it's purely a PR job for Ineos. I mean, I think part of it is the fact he's got £21 billion and he can afford to spend millions on sports teams.
Yeah, and why not? Why not? And I like the fact that we've got a good cycling team as well. I don't mind that particularly.
And cycling does need that sort of money. So Sir Ben Ainsley was actually talking about, but this is before Sir Jim Ratcliffe got involved with his team, saying that sport has a chance to improve sustainability and has a bit of a duty. And that was, and then Sir Jim Ratcliffe comes along and says, well, do you want 110 million? And go, actually, you're right then. Yes, we will. So perhaps a bit of hypocrisy
money talks,
there, but money talks.
Money does talk. And if more people are cycling, that's good for the environment, right? And if more people are cycling because Team Ineos win loads of medals because he's spent loads of money with, from that he's made spewing chemicals into the air. I mean, it's a weird marriage, but it seems to work.
Yeah.
So
they needed that. So we have to see how they get on the Tour de Yorkshire, which starts on Thursday.
Okay.
Story in the papers about red noses, recycling red noses. Now, what happened was Sainsbury's basically binned all their Comet Relief red noses from the previous year. Someone took pictures of a bin outside Sainsbury's.
Full of red noses.
Full of red noses.
Nothing funny about this, is there? No. Nothing comical about a bin full of red noses.
Yeah,
I see that.
I mean, red noses aren't the sort of thing that go out of fashion after 1 year. I'm sure you could reuse those red noses.
They get worn out, don't they? By laughter.
Well, these are ones that haven't sold. I mean, they haven't been worn, so... But
they haven't sold. They're just been wasted red noses.
Yeah.
Is there nothing you could do? Send it to Africa? Yeah, we haven't raised any money for you. Here's some red noses.
Oh, yeah.
What can you do with a red nose? I know. After Red Nose Day?
I know.
Day?
There
what
is
do?
Very little.
Well, there's another Red Nose Day coming, isn't there?
Yeah, use it. Save it.
Keep it. Save it for another year.
Okay. Another year. Yeah.
Don't
recycle.
Need any modifications.
But what
to
about the ones
nose?
That aren't used? That's what I'm saying. There's going to be loads left over. You can't just keep keeping them. Was there going to be a whole, you know, place where you put loads of red noses?
Red Nose Mountain.
Red Nose Mountain.
There's a mountain of red noses. Probably somewhere outside Switzerland. That's what I usually keep these things. There used to be a butter mountain, didn't there? Do you remember?
Yes, I do.
A butter mountain in the 70s.
Oh, God, the Red Nose Mountain.
Yeah, Red Nose Mountain. That sounds like a magical place.
Yeah, well...
Oh, close God. Your eyes on Red Nose Mountain. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, mate.
Right.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
Never seen that. James Bond film.
Could tell him anything. Yeah, okay.
But anyway, that mountain is outside Sainsbury's, but Sainsbury's says they're looking into it. They've started an investigation into this Brighton branch, which were throwing away all their red noses. I mean, you can't have that many being thrown away. To just use them for the next event.
I would say so. Keep them somewhere, but then they've got to store them.
Exactly right.
They?
That's the
Can
problem.
We use that bedroom? That's full of red noses. For the next year, we've got to wait till next bloody Comic Relief.
Or you open the wrong door and then you
all
get...
All the red noses fall out.
I've got to put all them back.
What happened to that young assistant? He was killed. crushed by a load of red noses falling out the store cupboard. I mean, that'd be unfortunate, wouldn't
it? Yeah. They'll be laughing at that.
No one. That's not funny at all. Yeah. Yeah, go on. Got another one?
Yeah, there's another story in the papers today about billboards spying on us.
Billboards?
Basically, they're putting cameras in billboards, and they're going to have facial recognition systems inside them. So basically, they can target you. So it sees you coming along, goes, all right, I know what he buys. I'm going to put up an advert for a Alexa smart speaker. Targeted.
You know what? How do we get targeted advertising all the time? You go on Facebook and you type in something, and then 10 minutes later you get an advert saying, camping, fancy a camping holiday or whatever it is.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So it's just how it goes.
You go to try and book something. I went to try and book something. It didn't work. And then all I got were offers for the place that I booked. Just time and time and
time
again.
That's what they do. So this is just another one of those.
It happens, This is happening at London's Westfield Shopping Centre and Harrods as well. You're going to be walking past and suddenly see, so whatever merch you're looking for, you're going to suddenly see pictures of that. And the next person will walk past and it'll change.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. What if two people are walking past at the same time who have diametrically opposed?
I knew you were going to say.
Well, I'm just thinking there are issues, aren't there?
Yeah,
it's when they start coming up going, Oi, Stoney. Who's that? Mr. Billboard talking to you directly.
Yeah.
Look at the state here.
Well, we've got talking toilets, so that's the next thing. The logical next step. We've got talking toilets in trains.
Who's got? Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. All right, Stoney.
Yeah, but they don't say hello, Stoney. They just go, hey, it's me, your toilet. Because it would be a bit weird if it actually said to you, hey, Stoney.
Back again.
Going again. Weak bladder, Stoney.
You're still getting old, mate.
That would be a bit weird. You were only in here half an hour ago. What are you doing in here? That would be a bit much, wouldn't it, really?
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, we were talking about Virgil van Dijk and this PFA, Player of the Year. Raheem Sterling... I mean, he didn't play brilliantly yesterday. I watched the Man City Burnley game, but he played okay.
Yeah, they did what they had to do. No one really, you could say, for Man City was magnificent. But they just kept going, they kept going, and they kept going. And, you know, it was one of them where they ground it out. They can win in so many different ways.
And they didn't give Burnley a corner. They didn't give them a corner. I mean, Burnley, they had no chances whatsoever. Edison did what he had to do. He was swift. He was quick off the line. He was... You know, his handling was good, but really he had nothing much to do. And Burnley are a handful.
They are the games that win you titles. It's those games where you're fully focused on what is going on. And you know what you have to do as a top team? You have to make sure you don't give them a sniff. You cut out any individual errors. And that was the thing for them, because if there was ever a day where an individual error could have cost them, it was that day, because Burnley asked questions of you. The way they play always will ask questions of Vincent Kompany at the back, the two fullbacks.
He was brilliant yesterday, Vincent Kompany. I mean, I've had doubts about him still being able to do it at the top level, but let me tell you, yesterday was a perfect game for him. I mean, Guardiola is such an outstanding manager, yeah. knowing what the team needs and what which personnel.
Exactly
I
right.
think he got it wrong in the Champions League. With
yeah,
the
I do too. I make sure I think that's a given.
But in the main, yeah. he has been outstanding this year. And if City do win, they will be worthy champions. Jamie has come in as well. He has got some other stories from the back pages.
Yeah, Matt Lawton in the Daily Mail this morning is taking a perhaps a rather cynical view on the marathon. He says the headline is "Tough not to question elite in £1 billion race."
He's what? Sorry, I don't understand.
Yeah, to question the elite in terms of doping. Basically, talking about how. I mean, we saw Kipchoge nearly break the two-hour mark, and there's talk of whether he can do that in the future, saying that the distance they're winning by now, when you compare it to, marathon times of the past, they are so far ahead that it makes you really question whether they are doping at the top of the sport. I mean, not talking about Kipchoge on his own, but all of them, the fact that it's come on so much, whereas you look at some of the other records in athletics that still stand from the 80s and 90s. And, I mean, for example, the athletes who are coming in 10th now are close to world records from 1984, that sort of stuff.
But that's 35 years yeah. ago. I mean, that's a long time. And athletics does, you know, records are broken,
but the average athlete has changed. The you know what an athlete looked like then and what an athlete looks like now. Even the spikes, even what they use,
yeah,
has changed.
Nutrition,
everything,
the training, yeah. the you know how much longer they can go on. I mean, and the humans are evolving, aren't they?
So warm weather training. I used to watch Cram and Ovet. They'd train over here where it was cold. Now they go to warm weather where
altitude,
they can do more.
Altitude training. You know, these guys.
So much more.
We were talking about it last week, this Camp yeah. Yaya up in the Ethiopian mountains. It's brutal where they train. But when they come down to sea level or just above sea level, I mean, they are so in so much better shape. So I'm actually not surprised that these things are happening. And I don't know what the gaps are. But, you know, we saw Usain Bolt come along. Yeah. No one, by the way, questioned Usain Bolt.
Absolutely
Usain
not.
Bolt was just an unbelievable physical specimen.
And he must have got drug tested so many times.
Well, maybe Kipchoge and Mo Farah and the rest are also unbelievable physical specimens. This is just, by the way, in response to Matt Lawton in the paper.
No, I think it's an interesting point. And you'd have thought that these guys, I mean, I don't know how good the drug testing is, but you'd have thought the guys at the top of the sport are being constantly tested.
All the time.
Oh,
But then they always have been in all sports, cycling, athletics, and they find ways around it, don't they? But he says, no longer do we blindly attribute African brilliance to being born at altitude and running to and from school every day. And no longer do we accept the explanation given to reporters by Kenyan coaches when Farah was training there in 2014 that it was the nearly men and women who were cheating, not the top guys. Clearly that isn't true, he says. Among those who've been exposed is Jemima Sumgong, winner of the Women's Olympic Marathon in Rio, Kip Rop, Olympic 1500 metre champion, and Kip Tum, the world record holder for the half marathon, who was withdrawn from this race on Friday after the IAAF provisionally suspended him for an athlete biological passport violation. So people are getting caught, but like you say, things move on. But it's just interesting how marathon running times have improved more than other.
Have they? I mean, this is what I'm interested in terms of world records and the gaps. Are they improving more? I remember in the 80s and what have you, when East German athletes, when Marita Kopp broke the 400-meter record, which is still the world record, and Florence Griffith Joyner, of
course.
That's
right.
And what happened there. And those gaps were enormous. If the gaps are of a similar time, not time, because obviously there's a lot more time in the marathon, but of a similar gap between the old world record and
exactly
the new one.
Exactly right.
Maybe you have to question, maybe that's what he's doing. I don't mind him doing this.
It's a good thing that he does it. And I think one of the things I suppose he's alluding to also is, as we've spoken about how it's all evolved and how it's moved on, the way people cheat has evolved as well.
Yeah, cool.
You know, the drugs they use, the scientific aspect behind it has advanced as well. So, you know, the people trying to catch them, the rat catchers, so to speak, have to also move along
It's always going to be a battle, especially, as he said, with the amount of money involved at the top of these sports. People are going to try and cheat to win them.
Do you know what? But that is why I think when you are caught, you should never be allowed to do it again.
I agree with you on
that's
that,
why
yeah.
that should happen. I don't care what, because you've got, you know, Justin Gatlin, people like that who have been caught multiple times for whatever reason, who get a couple of years off and then can still go back. That's what should happen. If you get caught, never again do you run that race.
I agree with that. He says that it's come on massively since the mid-90s when EPO became the drug of choice.
Right.
So, well, but it's a shame to be cynical when people have run so well, Kipchoge is so excellent, and we're not accusing individuals, but he's just drawing attention to the fact that the times have improved massively, yeah, and something to watch out
it's
for.
Funny, Roger Bannister broke that record. I wonder if people are going, do you know what? I'm not sure about him, you know. There's something going on.
Isn't he a doctor? What's he cooking up in that lab? Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Also worth mentioning, he says potentially technological doping, that everyone on the podium in the women's race and the men's race had these Nike trainers on, which Nike say make you go 4 to 5% faster. Or more efficient. Yeah.
I think, who was the Scottish runner? I think it was Muir who broke the, I think it might be the 1500 or 3000 meters record, British record, and they were umming and ahhing about that because of her footwear, because it was untested, or it wasn't open to everyone else.
It wasn't available to everyone else. Right. Yeah. So those
marginal gains, is that what they call it? That advantage?
Yeah. Team Sky, famous for that. Oh, the aggregate of marginal gains. Little things like changing the pillows when you get to the hotel. Little tiny things that you can do to an athlete. And in sports like cycling and running, those fine margins, especially cycling.
I just changed my pillow. Bought some new pillows.
Yeah.
Do you think I've been more lively?
It's these little things.
Those little things that make the show better.
Made you more miserable.
That's a good thing, isn't it? You're saying that.
Did you just see him look at me? Did you see how he looked? It was a throwaway look.
You're saying that like it's some sort of negative. What else have you got?
Some stories from outside the sporting world. Young people are shunning holidays involving booze and flings.
Are you?
You know what?
I'm not a young person.
I was putting you in the young category. No, I'd have took
26,
that.
20s, that's not young. Is he not? No.
Where's the cut-off mark?
It's 19. I believe.
This is, we're talking 18, 19 year old who like to go to Magaluf. Back in my day, Magaluf was, you know.
Yeah, 18 to 30 holidays. Mm. That was a big thing. Yeah. I never went on one.
No, me neither. But, I'd love to have, but.
Young people are shunning booze and.
88% instead prefer quality time with loved ones. 42% want to experience local culture. And just 10% prioritise partying. Compared to 26% of the previous generation.
I am disgusted with young people.
I don't believe that's true. There's something wrong there,
no,
mate.
No. That is true. And I'll tell you, a mate of mine, I was talking to a guy who does student gigs quite regularly, and he said, in student gigs in the past were chaos.
Mm.
Chaos, because they were all off their faces on booze, right? Cheap booze in the bar. Now they're all sitting there drinking tea and eating cake. Yeah, I mean, honestly, he goes, I don't like student gigs anymore. I said, what, they're difficult? He goes, they're dead, because they're all sitting there and they're all having a cup of tea. Oh, should we go and watch the comedy? I mean, it's a bit of a shame in a way, because I just think...
You like the rowdies.
But if you are going to get wasted, the time to do it is when you're 19, 20, 21, when you can recover. I understand that you might get a 2-2 instead of a 2-1, but honestly, is it that difficult out there for young people that they have to be on it from the first moment? It seems such a shame, such a waste of youth to me.
It does seem strange how over not that long a period of time, the thoughts of young people, what they like doing, and has changed so much. I was reading a serious piece in the Mail the other day about how now, if you're straight and not transgender at school, sometimes you can feel excluded or even bullied. You're not seen as deep enough or genuinely.
What, you just like people in the opposite sex? Weirdo.
Genuinely, you're not considered to be deep or evolved enough.
Things are really changing in terms of young people now. And I mean, the drug culture, by the way, is much less than it used to be. Used to go out and clubbing and all the rest of it. There's much less of that.
What's
going on.
What's wrong with young people?
Well, I think that they feel under massive pressure to try and achieve and do the best they can. And it's very competitive out there. And they feel like they have to be on it from day one. And I think it's a shame in a way, but that's the way it goes. I'm glad we had fun anyway, didn't we, Mort?
Wouldn't want to be a youngster now, mate.
I was at the end of the fun generation, I think. I think things have
changed.
You're
having fun. You have tremendous amounts of fun.
I'm included in that generation, yeah. But now I think things have changed specifically in the last few years.
It does feel like it.
Mm.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's a shame in a way for them, but, you know, hey, yeah. We had our fun, so I don't care.
We did. A thick burglar story of the day. This fella was caught and jailed after leaving DNA on a yoghurt he ate at home in South London. You don't need to go and eat a yoghurt when you're burgling a house. Just leave the yoghurts alone.
He was hungry.
Yeah, but he was hungry. Did he not eat before he came out?
Bring a packed lunch. Bring a packed lunch. Are you off burgling, dear? Don't forget your sandwiches and your flask. I can imagine him getting up and going, oh, no, I left the flask. There was some soup left in there. Yeah. I could have had that.
And then he has to make
to go and break in again.
And he has to make his own cup of soup and use the kettle. Oh. And then he's left his DNA. And then
He goes in the fridge and he goes, oh, I like those yogurts. I'll have one of those. What an idiot. What an absolute idiot. I mean, I wouldn't, if I'm burgling somewhere, unless I'm actually stealing food, I'm not looking in the fridge. I mean, is it, maybe that's what he was doing. Yeah. He was stealing food. He thought, I'll have this yogurt now. And he left his DNA. What an absolute moron.
It's complacency. It's complacent burgling, that is, isn't it? I think he's done it too much now. That he thinks he can just take the mic.
Complacent burglar.
He is eating yoghurts.
I'll make myself a stir fry. There's lying asleep upstairs going, what's that smell? That's sweet and sour. That's weird. I had a dream last night. yeah. Bit odd.
It is a bit odd, but he's been caught and he deserves it.
He has. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
In LA, they designed a shooter for champagne, basically.
Shooter?
Well, water.
What do you mean?
Like a water pistol. It's a champagne shooter. So it costs £77. And if you're hosting a party and you want to make it fun,
you can fire champagne into people's mouths.
Yeah. Will you be investing?
No. No, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I've got a water pistol and we fire it at next door's cat. We do. If you're listening, and my neighbours, and listen, you should know, that's what we do.
What they do
it
now.
It comes into the garden and it just looks through, and I'm like, right, we're having that.
So it does its business.
We have sometimes.
Is it causing any problems there or not?
Well, our cat won't go in the garden because their cat keeps coming in. So we fire a water pistol at it.
That's fair enough.
I think it is fair enough.
That's wrong.
Got his square on the head the other day. Absolutely one of the best. Get in there. And the look, honestly, the look of affronted sort of on the face of the cat was just brilliant as it got soaked on the face.
Is it a super soaker? Is it quite a powerful water pistol?
Big old water pistol, is yeah. It? Yeah, it picked the cat up and blew it over the fence.
Water cannon.
He got blown against the garden house at the back. Splat. Oh, it was great. You want to see that?
This is Love Sport.
And what you got, Jamie?
Yeah, a story in the paper about the teeth. Apparently wonky teeth are the new straight teeth. People have been going into dentists with their pearly white veneers and going, can you mess them up a bit?
How ridiculous. Why?
I think this is quite good. I think in recent years, having straight white teeth has become a bit too much of an obsession. And people like Keira Knightley, she's got famously wonky teeth. Ariana Grande, another celebrity, who have made sure that they haven't made their teeth perfectly white and straight.
Right.
You know, the likes of Simon Cowell or Cheryl Tweedy have got immaculate teeth.
Scouse teeth, they called them, didn't they, in some way? Scouse teeth. When you see Firmino's teeth ridiculously straight and
brilliant.
White.
And Jurgen Klopp's.
And Jurgen Klopp's as well.
He says he didn't go into the dentist and say, I want Bobby Firmino's teeth. So, those are examples in football. Brendan Rodgers, beautiful teeth as well. But apparently these days now, having slightly off-white or slightly wonky teeth is the new straight and white.
Oh my God.
Good news for all of us who haven't perfect teeth.
You know what? We do okay. We've all got some teeth and they're all,
all our own.
Yeah. Reasonable. That's right, all our own. So, I find this slightly weird.
A bit of personality to them, they're saying, rather than just having what every
teeth
other celebrity's
got. Personality.
Well, the Americans used to talk about British teeth, didn't they? And of course, in Austin Powers, he famously had bad teeth.
Yes, he
just so he stood out from the Americans with their beautiful pearly whites.
I was in Canada this week and I actually noticed the difference in teeth there. They've got all really nice teeth, like the Americans.
Really?
Yeah, you do notice that over there they love it.
Right.
Whether that's because they, I don't know, whether they go to the orthodontist more or they all have them whitened. I think over there also you can laser treat them as much as you want. There you can just go mad. Whereas here you can only go up to a certain level, like only a certain number of shades, whereas over there, there's no limit.
Certain so, number of shades?
Yeah, so like three shades lighter. The
right.
Dentist can only,
whereas over there, they can sort of zap them with lasers.
Can zap away for until, as long what, as you want.
Oh, when you open your mouth, God. It's blinding. Put your put your sunglasses on. I'm about to smile.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Just hey, don't get it.
You know what? It's to a certain extent, there is a lot of pressure on younger people.
Of course, yeah.
To have beautiful white teeth. So I don't, maybe this isn't a bad thing. But I think to go to a dentist and go, I want them messed up a bit, is a bit yeah, weird, I think. Odd. Yeah.
I'll mess them up for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Another story here.
For just threatened young people, man, with violence. You want your teeth messed up, son? Go on, then. Remember those, you talking to me or chewing a brick?
Yeah. Either way, you lose your teeth.
You talking to me or chewing a brick? Basically means either way you lose your teeth.
Right.
Chewing a brick.
They wouldn't know.
Brilliant. people didn't say that now. Yeah. Okay, what you got?
Yeah, another story here. Probably we'll be better off on an Alan Partridge show. Bryan Adams has spent decades selling out stadiums, but also...
Look into my eyes.
He's in the room. He's in the room with us.
Bryan Adams is in the room. What about
now he's got himself in between a whale and a whale poacher. Off
what?
The islands of Mustique.
Oh, what, so somebody's going to fire some harpoon and he's got in the way.
Someone was trying to kill the whale and he intervened.
Good
took matters into his own hands. He went out on his paddleboard and basically this whale was swimming within a 1,000-metre sea conservation zone around the Caribbean island of Mustique.
Yeah.
And he said he was witness to it. Went out there himself, got himself in between the two.
It's brave because if somebody's trying to harpoon a whale, that's a big old thing. And he's got in the way of it. But you know what? It's I can't believe that people kill them. I just genuinely can't. Everyone that goes on about the Norwegians are lovely, thanks for the Christmas tree, but they still kill whales. And I don't get it. The Japanese do it as well. I find it very upsetting. You know, I really do.
Well, it's all animals, really, isn't it?
No, particularly whales. Couldn't give a monkeys about lions. Sodom.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, no, of course it's all animals, that's right. But whales seem so intelligent and, you know, whale song and that. It's all lovely. Oh,
you know,
lions
you know a few, do you?
Rhinos as
hey,
well.
You met a few, have you?
Rhinos. Rhinos. Lovely. I love a rhino.
Yeah, I love a rhino.
What
I love them all.
What are you going on about? you're talking like they're your best mates.
What, you don't like them? What's wrong with you?
I'm just asking.
Why do you hate rhinos?
I never said it. You met a few, have you?
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
really
yeah.
intelligent.
Personal friends. I used to have one as a pet.
Have a bit of whale compassion, Paul. Will you please?
I have compassion. I just don't know any.
Anyway, the whales. Bryan Adams is doing his bit.
Bryan Adams
whales,
is doing
which
his
doesn't
bit.
Make up for 13 weeks and number one with Everything I Do, in my opinion. Which I hated that song.
Not forgiving him for that.
No,
his bank manager wouldn't hate it.
No, that was that did very well. But anyway, Bryan Adams is getting in the way. And also, get out the way, Brian.
But said, as soon as he got in the way, pretty much straight after that, the whale swam away. And he'd saved one whale.
Was he singing?
Was he? No. But the whale swam away.
Whale swam away.
Right. Thinking, good old Brian. Yeah. Right. That's a lovely story,
I know,
isn't it?
I know.
Bryan Adams, the Canadian songster.
Whale saver.
Yeah. I mean, he sings all right. What was that song? He did Summer of 69, didn't he?
Yes, that's a tune. Yeah. That's a tune.
Cuts Like a Knife, another good one from Brian.
It's all right, I suppose. Yeah, I quite like the one he did with the Spice Girl.
Me too, I do like
that. That's quite nice, their voices together.
Yeah, she's a decent singer. That
you're
Spice
looking
Girl.
At me like I'm mad.
No, I was trying to remember which one that was, actually.
Is it Baby When You're Gone or something like that? I
think something like that. It's quite nice.
Good tune. They're both good singers.
Paul, you have never sounded whiter than you did right
I know. I love the Spice Girls. What can I say?
What is love them. Wrong with you?
I know. I don't know why. Do you know what? You know, you listen to Spice Girls. My kids love them. And I'm just sitting there going, I like the Spice Girls. No one's going to... My reputation's gone. If I tell anyone...
Who are you?
What can I say?
Yeah.
Love sports.
Jamie is here with Back Page Stories.
Yeah, Back Page at the Times talking about Mo Farah. He says he doesn't regret his dispute or being public with his dispute with Haile Gebrselassie so close to the marathon. Wasn't the marathon he wanted. He ended up finishing fifth, which he said, of course, he was disappointed with. Kipchoge went on to record the second fastest marathon ever.
Yeah.
So he's a class above the rest, really. But yeah, strange timing for Mo Farah to do that last week. You know, when we talk about the dispute, this was originally stemmed from Mo Farah saying that he had £2,600 worth of currency stolen from his room during
four different denominations. The Bank of Farah is what we're talking about here.
Stolen from his room when he was staying at Haile Gebrselassie's hotel in Ethiopia. Gebrselassie said that wasn't the case in the world. It wasn't, none of the money or the theft wasn't proven. He also said that Mo Farah had kicked and punched a married couple, and Farah's coach said that was self-defense. Yeah. He was at this hotel for 3 months. And then he said, oh, we weren't offered a safe. Gebrselassie says, well, you were offered a safe. You turned it down. And then suggestions that they gave the safe away because it was faulty and then no one brought them a new one, and they didn't know if there was possible to get a new safe. Weird, weird situation.
We don't know the truth of it, to be honest. What was weird in all of this is that he's doing a press conference a couple of days before the marathon and he suddenly brings it up. Yeah. And then, by the way, after the marathon, where, by the way, 2 hours, 5 minutes and 39 seconds, by the way, is a pretty spectacular marathon. Yeah. Most of the time. Would have won the London Marathon quite a few times. But Kipchoge did the second fastest marathon of all time.
He's a beast.
Really unbelievable. And he said, and Mo Farah said it was hard. Whether it affected him, only he would know the truth of that. But he didn't run a bad marathon, did he? Let's be fair.
No, by his standards, so he wasn't expecting that. He said it wasn't what, from his training, he thought he'd be able to do better. 28 seconds short of his personal best.
Well, there's an emotional aspect in there. There's absolutely no dispute there. My worry is, like you said, what would prompt you to bring all this up? Because you know you're going to be asked about it. It's going to have an impact on you. You bring it up maybe after the race.
Yeah, nobody asked in the question exactly what happened with you and Gebrselassie in the hotel. He suddenly, at the end of the press conference, went into one about it. And it seems odd, but he had to get it off his chest.
Yep.
Might have helped him. Who knows, right? I know when I'm feeling upset, you know, I let it out. Yeah. By the way, I've got a bone to pick with you guys. But anyway, that's besides the point. But you know what, some people feel better after that stuff, you know? So I don't know. This is the thing about all this stuff over the last 3 days. We have no idea whether it helped him or hindered him, what the truth of it was. I don't know. He came fifth, but you know what? He is going to compete in Tokyo in a couple of years' time. There is no doubt about that. If Mo Farah wants to win something, generally does, doesn't he?
As long as it's Kipchoge.
Yeah.
Kipchoge, as long as he's not there, because I know we're doing all this talking about Mo Farah. Someone, you know, and I think he's working towards breaking the 2 hour barrier, isn't he?
He could do with punching and kicking him, really, couldn't he?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
but yeah, no, yes, he could. Yes, to be fair, he could. But the thing is also, this is Mo Farah's quite early on in his marathon running.
He's very new to it.
It's pretty new, and I think there's plenty of improvement there.
Yeah. So,
plus he wants to improve, which is a good thing.
So I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Whether there's improvement for Kipchoge, we'll have to see. Like you say, Mort's trying to go for that sub 2 hour. Mm. He says, I come from Africa. In Africa, we don't chase two rabbits at once. And what he meant by that was, I was focusing on winning the London Marathon, not thinking too much about what time I got, just making sure I won it.
Right.
My business is simple. I don't have anything now. I need to go back, sit and be like my coach and see what I'll do next. So
he'll be the one, though. He'll be the one, because I think he's done 2 hours, 5 seconds or something like that before, but it was not an official thing.
Yeah.
No.
He did it round a track, I think, with people helping him. I forgot what they're called now.
Pacemakers.
Yeah, did it around the track with pacemakers. 2 hours, 5 seconds, I think, something like that.
Yeah,
so he's going to be the one.
Oh, my God, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, that is one of those, that's like 4 minute mile, isn't it? 2 hour marathon.
Exactly right.
So very, very impressive.
Yeah, certainly is.
Okay.
Also impressive for Mercedes this weekend, another 1-2. So it broke a record, first time it's been done, 4 consecutive races, 1-2 for any team. It's getting a bit of a shame if you wanted a close constructors championship, isn't it? Because Ferrari now seem way off the pace. And this was one of the ones, we were talking about it before, how the Baku Grand Prix with that big long straight where Ferrari you'd have thought would be very good, would dominate. And actually Charles Leclerc was one of the quickest in practice.
He was winning the race for a while, but then he went in for a pit stop, didn't he?
Leclerc. he was never going to be on top in that race. Right. I mean, that was all because of the way the pitting had gone.
Right.
I'm not sure he was actually.
No, he started in eighth.
He was in front because I turned it on and we watched it for about half an hour, 40 minutes, and he was winning. And then I think he went into the pits and I think a few of them overtook him, and that was that.
Right, yeah, he started in eighth because he crashed in qualifying. Right. But he had, before he crashed in qualifying, he had been quickest in practice. So again, but it keeps being, I mean, every race, Ferrari have a chance here, something goes wrong. With last time it was Leclerc's engine failure. Vettel made.
They're imploding, aren't
Vettel
they?
Vettel mistake. Yeah, it just seems like something always goes wrong for them.
Do you know what? I actually think, and I said it at the start, that the biggest fight, the biggest race, the biggest competition is going to be between Bottas and Hamilton, Leclerc and Vettel. Putting all the other things to one side, these team orders are going to come into play, because you look at Bottas at the moment, I think it was probably the first couple of laps where it was won or lost, Hamilton was saying, and he says he gave in to Bottas and let him, because I think they were going to collide or something like that.
Yeah.
And he let him go.
Yeah, well, no, it was skill of both drivers to avoid that crash.
You're right. And Rebecca Clancy in the Times talking about that today, the mutual respect that they've got for each other. And famously, Rosberg and Hamilton didn't get on at all. Mm. Rosberg finally beat him to the title and then retired, having been absolutely spent from that championship, whereas with Hamilton and Bottas, they get on well and it seems they really respect each other. And I think a lot of credit has to go to Toto Wolff, boss of Mercedes, who allows them to race each other but doesn't say, oh, you're the number one. Hamilton, although he has been the number one always really in terms of who's the better racer, he's not told, oh, you get priority. Whereas with Ferrari, we've seen a little bit this year, Leclerc being told
to stay
back away from Vettel. Yeah, I mean, that could change.
I genuinely do think, as it goes on, if they're nip and tuck, which I think they will be, I think Bottas will win one, I think Hamilton might win one, I think it will go like that. When it gets to the crunch, I'm not so sure they'll let them race, because I think the both of them will go to win, and I think that it won't be, I'm going to concede so that we both finish one or two. I think one of them will genuinely want to win it if it stays as tight as I think it will.
You know what,
be.
I think also it rather depends how close Ferrari are to them as well. Mm. If they're 60, 70, 80 points ahead and they're going to win the Constructors' Championship and one of them is going to win the race, they win the title, they might let them race. Because Hamilton, I mean, Hamilton is the senior driver just because he's got five world titles. But in this particular season, there's not much between them. There really isn't.
I think it's quite good just to allow them to race as they have been, as long as they're not silly about it. It's almost giving them that option. If you can be mature about it and race sensibly, and as Hamilton said, he says, I could have pushed a lot harder, but where would that have got us? Potentially, if something goes wrong and then Vettel comes into the fold, this is in this weekend's Grand Prix, you know, and then one of us loses a place, and that's really stupid. So as long as they're mature enough racers to not go so hard that they crash into each other, then I think it's healthy for the competition.
And also healthy for motor racing generally, because people want to see racing.
Yeah, Bottas now 1 point ahead of Hamilton because he got a fastest lap in one of the races and they've each won two. So good little battle at the top there.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.